council meeting to order. We are having a special council meeting. It's Thursday, March 20th, 2008, and we'll begin with that. Need to excuse the mayor, he's out of town, and also Councilmember Truitt will not be with us this morning. We have two items on the agenda. The first one is to take action on the following resolution: canvassing, declaring, and adopting the results of the primary election held on March 11th, 2008. Do I have a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. The second item is items from citizens present. Are there any speakers?
No.
All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Motion and second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. We will now call the study session to order. We have six items on our study session agenda today. The first one is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide feedback on the 2008 Major General Plan Amendment applications.
Vice Mayor, Council, you may recall back in February, we gave you presentations of the two major plan amendments that have been submitted for this calendar year. At that time, the council had some questions and some suggestions for the applicants and things they might want to see in their applications. Their final submittal deadline is coming up next week on the 28th, so they've been working on some modifications to those submittal packages. So we decided to give them the opportunity this morning to come back and give a brief presentation to you themselves of some of those things they're going to be adding to their packet and further explain their proposals. So we'll go to KC0801, which is the DMV proposal first, and let them come up and give you some of their information. Then when they're done, we'll go to 0802, the Levine, and have them give a presentation. So Mr. Gamage is here.
Good morning, Mr.
Gamage.
You did a nice job the other night.
Yes, that was fun.
Yeah, Grady was one of the panelists at the 50th anniversary celebration for the Founders Day for Arizona State University. Yeah, he was representing his father.
The name change.
The name change, right?
University, yeah.
Right, so because it became went from Arizona State College to Arizona State University.
By vote of the people. And it's, you know, it's intimidating when I'm asked to do that stuff. I realize what an old-timer I have become. I'm sure some of you may have had that experience on occasion as well.
It's Didn't you say you were 8 months old at the time it happened?
8 years.
Oh.
8 years old. Yeah, I wish.
I was trying to help you there, Grady. You didn't take the feed. Okay.
Vice Mayor, members of the council, a couple of weeks ago you had a briefing by staff that we were here and listened to. And we wanted to show you a couple of the things that we'll be filing, in fact, today, in connection with the Proving Grounds case. I think there was some question raised about the fact that the existing general plan has lots of lines and demarcations on it, and it seems like the new one is all just one big master plan community designation. Which is the way we're doing this under the new PCD zoning. So I wanted to just show you a couple of things that are some of the exhibits that are in the PCD as we file it to give you assurance that we understand what the rules are and that, you know, we appreciate the fact that this is a new and different procedure for you. I just want to be sure everybody understands how it's going to come together. So this we will be filing in draft with the staff today. I can see Mr. Wesley is just hugely excited about getting his hands on this and starting to read it before he goes to bed every night. This is the PCD document itself that has the general development standards in it. And let me show you, okay, let me, that one. This is a plan that you've seen before. And that at the Planning Commission work study session we showed, this is what we have called the chassis plan. You will see that it looks quite a bit like the HDR plan because we've been going through that process and working with them. And this is kind of the framework for the planning that we're doing on the property. One of the questions that was raised in the earlier study session was, well, is there still golf up here? Yes, there is still golf up there. We have the two core designations here and the third farther off in time and probably smaller core designation at this end, and this kind of chassis of open space that links things together. What happens then is that's kind of the framework for our planning process. In the PCD, that gets turned into, this is a an iteration, not final yet, of the development unit plans. So what happens is there are development units described. Each of these colors is a different one here. Attached to that is a matrix that tells you what you can do in that unit and creates a variety of standards, including, Vice Mayor Walters, you talked about minimums and maximums. Some of them do indeed have those kinds of parameters within them. And this budget then references specific development standards that are attached to each of those development units. And so as this gets filed, it's still very much in draft. We're still making changes. We know the staff will have comments. We know we'll be back here many times. Doesn't want to stand up. Back here many times in the future to talk about aspects of the regulations as they attach to those individual units. This is the culmination of what we talked about at the time of the text amendment for the PCD, which is that doing it in this form allows us more flexibility within the units. We don't have to, at the scale of a 3,000-acre planning project, figure out exactly where each thing goes within here. Progressively then over time, each of these units gets a more specific development unit plan governed by the PCD document. And we, as we develop, we keep track of the land use budget and how we're operating within that land use budget. So that was really what I wanted to tell you, because I had felt like maybe there was still some, because this is so novel, still some concern about how is this going to unfold exactly, and are we going to see more detail at some point? Here it is.
That looks like a little more detail.
Yeah.
I think that the concerns are, first, that it is novel, as you pointed out, and the second one is that in the past we didn't have 207 to deal with, and we now have 207, and so everyone is concerned about what kind of rights they have granted that can come back and bite them around the airport. And so I think that's mostly what you're hearing.
Right.
Not that we're opposed to it, but we just want to make sure that we're headed down the right path. As we're talking, it feels like we are, but I want to make sure. Questions? Nope. Okay, we're good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, who's got the next one? Andrew, are you? Oh, no, Susan.
Good morning. I'm Susan Demmett with Buse Gilbert, and I feel very empty-handed up here today. But
yeah, where's your huge?
As we've been clear all along with the Levine General Plan Amendment application, we're not going forward with zoning at this time. But one of the things that we have done, and we received a letter from the Planning Department last week, was about 2 pages of modifications they wanted to see to our General Plan Amendment application. There were no surprises in there, and we will be incorporating all of the things that staff has asked us to do into our application. With respect to our request, we're still asking for the mixed-use community designation over the entire property. What we'll be including with a little more detail in our revised submittal as it comes in next week is a very detailed conceptual land use plan, and it was actually used in our 2006 general plan amendment as a concept exhibit. We're going to incorporate that into our submittal this time, and we're modifying it slightly from the prior exhibit to accommodate some things that staff has asked us to do, as well as to bring it in a little more in harmony with the HDR plan. But it looks very much like a zoning exhibit. It's very detailed. It's that level of detail. We will have descriptions for all of the land use categories. And so that's the next level of detail that you'll see as part of our general plan amendment application. And it's sort of, you know, it's a layer underneath the mixed-use community designation we're asking for, so that when we do come in for zoning, you have something to look at and say, this is what they were intending when they asked for this mixed-use community. And that's really, I mean, for us, that's about the extent of the level of detail that we're going to go to at this time. When we're ready to move forward with zoning, we'll come in with a planned community district document very similar to what DMB is putting together.
Excellent. Do we have questions from anyone up here for them? For Susan? All right. Thank you very much, Susan. We appreciate it.
Vice Mayor, just want to take a moment and remind the council overall the process for the major plan amendments. As I mentioned earlier, the final application is due next week on the 28th. From there, we will send out notification to a wide variety of groups and agencies in the area, starting the 60-day review period that they'll have to review those applications and make comment, provide feedback to staff. Then staff will review those and summarize them. We have scheduled two public hearings for the P&Z as required by state statute. The first of those will be in July, the second in August. Should the P&Z be able to act on the case and make a recommendation in August, and it'll be before this board in September. Should take a little bit longer than that date moves back. But right now we're anticipating the earliest date this would be to council would be in September.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Anything else on item number one? Then we will move on to item two. And I want to invite any council-elect who are with us to join us up here. This is a part of our ongoing budget conversation. And I thought I saw Dennis Kavanaugh here.
Vice Mayor.
Dave Richens. And I want to invite you to sit next to the council member you're going to, you know, for the district where you're going to be. So if we can kind of scoot things around here. I also want to acknowledge the fact that Rex Griswold and Scott Smith are in the audience, who are both still mayoral candidates. Dave,
you know, Dave
scoot over here. Come on over here. Yeah, no.
These budget cuts are murder. There's no chair.
You were supposed to bring a chair. Okay, and if Alex joins us, he may be watching us on TV today, but if Alex joins us, he's out of town. Okay. I was going to say, if he does, we'll have him sit next to you, Mike. We're going to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on budget issues, including but not limited to the financial forecast, the budget status, and budget recommendations. Since this council will not, the current sitting council will not be the council that will be voting on the budget, but the new people, after they are sworn in, will have to vote on the budget immediately. We want to make sure that their input is included. We won't be inviting you to vote, but we certainly will be inviting you to speak. So if you have questions, if you have input that you would like to give, just jump right in. Just raise your hand. You know how it works. All right.
Vice Mayor, members of council and council-elect, let me just quickly start off. Because the process and the timing of where we are today is a little different than what we've done in the past, with the idea that we have presented to council back in the fall and then updated, I think, in December, the financial forecast and the concerns about the downturn in the economy and identifying what that shortfall might be. We had always indicated that we would be coming back in March to update those numbers and also to begin discussing how we would begin to address the shortfall. What we are going to do today, though, is maybe going a little bit further than we've probably done in the past, where we're actually presenting to the council, as we stated, an update on the financial forecast, but also you have attached is a proposed recommendation to deal with the identified shortfall as we know it today. So you have before you the total list of proposed, reductions or revenues that are needed in order to address the shortfall. So you have all that before you. Then what we would propose to do, I think we'll begin scheduling next Thursday, is we'll bring the departments will continue, will then be coming forward to make a presentation on their budget and speak directly to the proposed reductions or revenue enhancements that are identified here. So this is a little different in that it's almost like getting the proposed budget early on, but we felt because of the magnitude of the revenue shortfall that it necessitated us moving forward a little bit faster and getting this on the table. We're not asking for council to take any votes today. This is really for information purposes. And I do find it curious that there was a decision made to single out the mayor and his participation here today. The mayor and I have been talking. We talk on a weekly basis. We knew some time ago that he wasn't going to be here. We had a conversation. I have talked to him about generally what you're hearing today. He does have that advantage on a weekly basis. So. To suggest the mayor isn't aware of what's being provided today is probably inaccurate. Does he have the detail? No. Will he have the opportunity to be briefed by the city manager? Absolutely. Councilman Truitt is not here also. But he, we've had a conversation that he will get briefed at a later time. No decisions being made today. This opportunity to be briefed and to bring the council up to date on what's going on.
And Chris, for those who have just joined us, you know, we get new people watching us on TV all the time. Let's acknowledge the fact that we knew last fall that we were looking at a shortfall of probably about $12 million at that point in time. We immediately started doing things. You froze things. You didn't hire in certain positions. Just as we are encountering in the state and we are encountering in the nation, Mesa is subject to exactly the same financial situations. I think the city of Phoenix is approaching about $100 million that they're having to cut. And so our number has been growing just as their number has been growing. So we're talking about the general fund budget. Could you just remind everybody what the general fund budget amount is? I know you're going to get to it on your thing, but just let's remind everybody, how much is the general fund? Because people out there talk about $1.2 billion. That isn't the general fund.
You will see on your slide 5, $328
million. $328
million.
So we are looking at cutting somewhere between probably somewhere between $18 and $20 million by the time this all rolls out on a budget of $320 million. I just want to make that clear because there are people out there who are saying things like, well, how much is this when you're talking about a $1.2 billion budget?
And we're not talking about the $1.2 billion.
Correct,
budget.
We are not.
Thank you, yes.
I just want to make that clear for everybody watching. Scott?
Since we're doing that, why don't we explain, I mean, the budget that's posted is $1.2
billion. Billion. Did I say million? I'm sorry.
Billion.
I think you said billion.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, if you didn't, I know what you
but
meant.
But the budget is the total all funds budget. And there's a slide here that shows how we get there.
Okay.
I think actually we go to the presentation,
that. We'll go to the presentation, but I wanted everybody to have the background who's watching because I know that, you know, the blogosphere can get it wrong on occasion. On just one or two occasions they've gotten it wrong. Okay.
Good morning, Vice Mayor, council members-elect. Before I get started, I've had a lot of people coming up to me and asking me how my health is, and I've been kind of wondering, that's very nice, very touching. Then I got to thinking about it. Either they want something bad to happen to me or nobody wants my job. But what we're going forward with is, and what's happening to us, you hit right on the head of the nail this morning. What is happening to us is directly related to the economic cycles of the budget and what's going forward. We're going to present you three documents this morning. One will be this presentation. Another will be a memo from Mr. Brady, and another is a list of the suggested reductions to attain our cut needs. These are all going to be posted on the intranet and the internet for public consumption, and they should post within the hour or so. So they will be available. Just to get into this, if we go to slide number 2 in your packet, this is the all funds budget you were just talking about. This, and I gave you this, we got a graphic representation on page 3, but it's just to tell you how we present and discuss the budget. Item number 1 is where we get into our general governmental operations and maintenance. And the reason we break that out from the rest of the general fund, items number 1 and 2 are the general fund, is because that's your discretionary dollars that we have decision-making and redirection and prioritization type of decisions we can make over these items. If you get into the rest of the general fund, it's grants, debt service, capital, and then contingency from a budgeting standpoint, which is funds available for emergencies. So the $328.1 million we talked about for 07-08 is that decision-making area that we'll get into. Well, then we get into the rest of the funds, just so people are aware of it for any new council members or council members-elect. We have some restricted funds like quality of life, transportation, which are made up of two restricted funds of HERF and the local street sales tax. Number 5 there on your slide is utilities and enterprise. That's all the enterprises. Then we have bond expenditures, and then we have the all other restricted and trust funds. And that's a myriad of smaller funds that are restricted in nature to specific uses. On slide number 3, then you get into your all funds budget from the total dollars that we were talking about. That comes up to the $1.2 billion that we were discussing. And I just wanted to point out, I'll have time at the end for questions, but if you have any questions on anything, please interrupt. And then slide 4 just gives you the graph or the numerical breakdown of what those are by those different types of funds. Slide number 5 is where we get into what we call the discretionary dollars. For 07-08, it was $328.1 million. Of that, public safety is 219.2. That's 67% of those total dollars. And the way this graph works, the inner ring where you see the pie charts, that's the expenditures related to those programs. The outer ring is a representation of funds available from revenue sources to pay for those inner ring expenditures. So if you look at public safety, sales tax, and the enterprise transfer, and most of the state share are used covering the public safety aspect of it. Everything else comes out of the remainder of state shared, fees for services, and other services charges. Slide number six. Now I want to get into what is affecting us on the budget to actual on our revenue side. As you know, we came to you in December and give you a point of reference, and we gave you a full update and a forecast out to 24-25 on what our expected needs are. At that time, we talked about always having our fund balance goal set at least 10% in our unrestricted balances. We knew at that time that we could not do that in the general fund on the long term because of this economic cycle, so we were looking at a three-year window. But what starts to put pressure on us is what is happening on the downturn and looking for where we are on the bottom of this economic downturn. So this year and next year are going to be fairly restricted. We're expecting a downturn in revenues for both years. So I want to start going through what's happening to us for 07-08. In total, if you look at the total at the bottom of the line, we expected $324 million from these revenue sources, sales tax, state shared sales tax, urban revenue sharing, which is the income tax sharing, vehicle license tax, fees for services, grants, and other revenues. You can see we've got about a $16 million deficit there, $16.2 million reduction. That's out of 07-08. Most all of these, other than if you want to talk grants is usually timing issues. Most all of these are directly tied to the elasticity of the economy. So the downturn, we are feeling it. Does anybody have any questions on any of the specific items?
No. Just for, I know you're going to have an explanation because you always do, but there's a couple of numbers that jump off the pie chart versus the numbers. In other words, sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
It's budgeted $113 million. Okay. But on the pie chart, it shows it's 79.9. Can you explain that difference so that people can understand it?
One of the things that, one of the projects we're going to be working on, it's easy to set up slide number five when we're allocating resources. There's about five or six variable items that affect how this is put together. When I start going through the actuals and maintaining that proportionality, because what we do on slide five is take out grants, all that debt service, capital, those legal mandate types of areas. When we start coming back to a fund level, which is what's represented on number six, it's hard giving where we are going from fund balance and all those variable revenues against variable expenses to get to your fund balance to keep the proportionality comparison that is a true representation of what would happen from slide five. We're going to work on that this next fall. So what I've done is just go back up to the fund level, because this is what would be coming into the fund, and we'll break it back out into the future for what's going to be on our discretionary on 08-09.
The point is if I understand it though, there's roughly $33 million worth of sales tax money that's not going into the general fund discretionary because
the sales tax
it's having to cover
is applied to more activities
right.
than just these activities identified on five.
Exactly.
For example, debt service.
Right.
And the we say contingency, it's the fund balance that is required for us to set aside. So if you just took those two alone, if you took that sales tax, we're allotting or portioning out the sales tax across these areas. So yes, this is only a portion of it, but a large portion goes to debt service, and a large portion will go to our fund balance.
Again, right? Just if somebody's not familiar
right.
with that, they
yes.
look at this and they see, gee, we've got $113 million of sales tax revenue, but you're only allocating right. $80 million of it to the general fund. Where's the $33 million?
Yep.
Because it covers other things that we are obligated to cover.
Right.
So I just...
And that's a very good point, and what we did was wanted to represent what our total loss to the general fund is for this representation.
Yeah,
so just under $10 million to the general fund.
Right.
I'll show you some on estimates on some of the other restricteds. It does affect quality of life. It affects local street sales tax. It affects HERF, all that, those types of things. But from just discussing at the general fund level, this is what this is. So we're down $16 million, $16.2 million in the general fund for 07-08. We saw this happening, as you know, starting in October into December, and we gave you an update in, I believe it was the end of January or early February. We come in December at $12.5 million deficit for meeting our fund balance needs. Mr. Brady gave you an update of $15 to $16 million, and I'll give you the final update here in a minute, but you can see it's gotten steadily worse on us as we've gone forward. So, alluding to some of the plans and practices that we've used to address the shortfall, when we started seeing this, we started reviewing all discretionary purchases. We started looking at any of the issues related to freezing positions. And as you know, we've already had building safety come through on the development side, where we're addressing these shortfalls and these specific needs. So if you get and look at, and now I'm going back somewhat to those activities, and not at the general fund level, but this is the discretionary dollars. Out of those, we've cut $9.2 million in expenditures for 07-08 is what our estimate is. Because where those other revenues go is to pay for the legally obligated debt service. We don't have discretion over that, and the legally obligated capital and the fund balance portion of it we maintain from that percentage standpoint. So if we hadn't started this, we'd have had a much, much worse picture that I'd be talking about today to maintain fund balance going into 08-09 and 09-10, since we're looking at that window. So that kind of summarizes 07-08. Now let's get into 08-09. Now we've gone back to just going to the major fund level for the general fund. And I've given you city sales tax, state shared sales tax, vehicle license tax, and the urban revenue sharing, which is income tax. Now, one to point out, there is a two-year delay, and there's the reason I did this, and I'll get to a graph in the back to talk about urban revenue sharing. You'll notice that for 08-09 originally proposed budget that we brought forward in the biennial process, of which we're adjusting now, $67 million in urban revenue sharing. There is a two-year lag on that share. So we're going to see the effects of this economic downturn 2 years out on this revenue source. Okay, so next year we're okay at the urban revenue sharing level unless they change the formulas. That is the caveat there. Vehicle license tax, we're expecting a decrease of $3.1 million. State shared sales tax, $5 million. And this is the one that's pretty devastating to us, is our local city sales tax, $16.2 million. The result of this is, in our forecast for this year and the next year, we will collect less in sales tax locally than we did in 06-07, so the next 2 years. Right now, the econometric modeling is still showing in 9-10, we may start to see a slight improvement in the economy, but I want to make sure that we hit the bottom of this trough first before we start getting aggressive and doing anything on the revenue side. Anybody have any questions about any of the revenues? And just to give you the 08-09, now we have not asked for any of these restricted funds that I'm going to discuss here to adjust budgets for 08-09. We may balance some between like HERF and local street sales tax, but we have not reduced. We can sustain these restricted fund balances through. But just to give you an idea, city sales tax, the quality of life, we're expecting in 08-09, $3.7 million less. City sales tax on the transportation side, which is the city street sales tax, $4.3 million loss. And the reason there's a little bit of ratio difference, if there's a question about that, there's old contracts, existing contracts, when we changed the rate related to local street sales tax that still is coming through and messing up those mathematical ratios just a bit. You've got long-term contracts that are under the old sales tax method, and we've got now, obviously, the street sales tax is under the new for anything new. Highway user revenue, we're looking at 2.6, and then the 3% HERF monies, highway user revenues, of $450,000. So those two or three items, city sales tax on transportation, HERF, and HERF 3% are all our street maintenance money. So we'll be monitoring and watching that into the future.
I have a question for you. On the bottom, you're on slide 9, right? Okay, if you look at the asterisk at the bottom, it says the Quality of Life Fund will be combined with the General Fund starting 7-1 of 2008. What's the rationale for that?
And I can speak to that, Vice Mayor. Our rationale is that when we first did the Quality of Life sales tax, now been 11 years ago, it was 10 years worth of programmed expenses. We have initiated all those programmed expenses with the exception of a few capital projects really related to the swimming pools, things of that nature. So it's a long, all the police officers have been hired, the firefighters have been hired, the art center has been built, things of that nature have been done. We put a significant amount of time into tracking those revenues in an ongoing basis. It's our proposal to combine those into the general fund, continue those projects status quo, and eliminate that tracking process with all but the exception of the Mesa Arts Center.
Okay, if I were sticking around, I would tell you that's a problem for me, because I think that there were things that we told the voters we were going to do with the money. We have all the way along, we have tracked it, and we have told them that we did what we said we were going to do. For me, it's just an issue of being able to tell them where that money is. So if you're telling me that you can still track that within the general fund,
that's where
we can still show the number of police officers that were hired by Quality of Life and show them that they're in the police department. We can show the number of firemen that are in the police department. It is becoming a bureaucratic nightmare to try to track each individual officer or fireman through the process that was hired by Quality of Life. And now that they're all hired and that they are all in within the department, it's now a sales tax that comes in that supports them, just like sales tax that comes in that's not in Quality of Life to fund other police activity. So we are sensitive to that issue about identifying it, but the identification is you have so many more officers, so many more firemen that are now being funded by the city. And ultimately, that's, I think, what the purpose of the Quality of Life tax was.
Well, that was a piece of it, but there were other things like the ballot said build and operate the art center. You have that segregated out here. You also had things that had to do with the pools that you identified. There were also things that had to do with libraries and parks that were in there. And so my concern is that we maintain the integrity of reporting to the voters that the money is going.
Projects are easily identified because they have a specific time frame, and we can show a project that was completed and built, whether it's a pool, we can identify those. What we're really talking about is the ongoing personnel-related expenses, mostly on the public safety side, is the one that's creating the issue for us.
And there's a management issue here on forecasting. Just for example, this fund has the same economic pressures that the general fund does.
Yes.
In technicality, it is a general fund.
Yes.
So we're not proposing changing the priorities related to these programs. But if we continue to leave them segregated with the inflation costs related to police and fire in those programs, we end up just taking a transfer from the other general fund to here to maintain these programs in the future. So combining them, we have the same management goals without complicating it, and we can still discuss it at the level that we can discuss it now.
Since I'm not going to be here to have that conversation, I think that, you know, I'll leave that more to the people who will be here, but I wanted to express, you know, my
I think the accountability is there. We can say there's this many firemen, this many police officers that are in the budget that are being funded. There's no doubt that is still going to be obvious and transparent. It's really we're creating these separate little pots of money, and it becomes a kind of a little bit of a gymnastics to try to track them over a period of time.
Mike?
What's the Quality of Life annual projected in that quarter cent?
Currently, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $27 million, 25
to 7. So you'll break out then the operating costs from the Art Center, or a portion thereof of the operating costs.
Here's what we're proposing. We are going to take the schedule. We're going to leave the MAC in the Quality of Life Fund separate, so it's very clear what it is. We will take what the scheduled transfers subsidy from the Quality of Life tax, and that's what they will get into the future. And then we'll talk about them. They're coming next week to talk about their process and the sustainability of their earned revenues and those kind of things.
How much of that 26 is the Art Center?
About $4.5 million.
Okay, so then you have 20-some million that will absorb to the general fund that will...
Yeah, well, some of it is set aside for projects.
Right. Right, there's a little
bit of the capital side in it. Right. I'm talking about the quarter cent operation.
The ongoing operation, the predominant majority of that operation is the expense related to the 120 police officers and the 65 firefighters.
And we're now 10 years into the program? Right.
We're starting the 11th year.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions on this item? Okay, go ahead.
So... on slide 10, we're just going through and giving you a graphical representation of what we've talked about. The amount of above that line, that the blue and so forth there, is the old 1% historic rate, just for a graphical representation of that. In 07, 08, you can see where we were budgeted from to where we're estimating now, and you can see in 08, 09, we're expecting a continued 2% loss from where we end up in 07, 08. Of which we'd originally projected 5.3% increase over 0607. We're now projecting a negative 3.6, so a very heavy impact on 0708 on local sales tax.
Mr. Whelan.
Were you projecting a 3% or a 3.5% growth?
5.3.
At that,
from
we got a little aggressive with our projections.
Well, I think we stayed on the conservative side, if I'd have to say. We were on the conservative side when we started this year. And in fact, through the first 2 to 3 months of the year, things didn't, they were holding okay. We were starting to see the weakness. But starting in September and October, and I think I talked about it when I did the forecast in December, if we'd have come into October and given you a forecast, I would have come back the next month because everything started sliding off the table from that point on. It was almost like a switch has been thrown in the economy at a local level, and from that point, we've been in the slide.
And just to point out, what you really do is the compounding effect of going from anticipating a 5.2% increase to realizing a 3.6% decrease. So you're almost at 9-10%
throughout
change, and that is huge. I mean, that's where, when we talk about it being below what we received last year, it's really 10% below what we had budgeted, and that's where it hurts. And the 5% was actually historically a conservative number up to that point. And it just, at this point, it fell off, and that's what we're dealing with at this time.
The last time we saw something even close to this was after September 11th.
That is correct.
In the 2001-2002 cycle. But that was a one-year...
And then it came back.
...downturn, and then we started to come back this time. And what was the percentage? I can't tell by looking at the chart here. What was the percentage that we went down? Do you know?
I think it was in the neighborhood of 2 or 3.
Okay.
I have to go back historically.
Well, if I had guessed, that would have been...
I think it was around 2 or 3.
Okay.
And we thought that was pretty catastrophic.
We thought that was difficult, and this is... And once again, that was experienced throughout the Valley. My recollection is that only Chandler, that had just opened their new mall, did not get hit with that one. Councilmember Summers, you had a question? Oh, you raised your hand. Sorry. You're not even allowed to scratch when I'm running the meeting.
Vice Mayor, by comparison, I mean, if you look back at 2005-2006 and compare that to 08-09, they're pretty similar, which means in 4 years we have gained nothing. When I'm looking at everything here below the line in the original 1 cent sales tax, when you think of the service demands that have increased in that four-year period of time with really no change in our sales tax sales, if you will, it's a pretty significant adjustment.
Unfortunately, a lot of people have been living off of HELOCs, and they've maxed out.
Well, and even more graphically, and Brian's brought this forward, and we'll have it later in this when we go forward with the budget presentations. If we remain or maintain this in a constant dollar for inflation against our per capita count of individuals, this is actually decreasing. So that's even more graphic representation of what's occurring with us on our revenue sources.
Thank you.
Building permits, as we discussed in the presentation with building safety, this doesn't overall affect the general fund per se, unless we get into a deficit situation where we're subsidizing the area. This is their self-contained revenues, but you can see what's happening to building safety and their revenue sources on building permits. They've fallen off about 6%, so for 08-09, and 13.5% for this fiscal year. Court fine revenues, one of the areas that is actually increasing. The volume in the courts have picked up, and we're reflecting that on our estimated for 07-08. state shared revenues. I have a small correction to make here. The budgeted and the estimated lines should be over two bars. Just so shift those over, and then they'll be in the correct spot. You've got 207.08s. The first one is the budgeted amount. The second one is the estimated. As we've discussed before, the urban revenue short shared portion of this is constant for the next 2 years from what we had originally forecasted. The variance comes about because of the auto license tax changes, which we've seen a very significant decrease in auto sales locally and regionally, and the state shared sales tax. We took this one out to 11-12 because I want you to show you the impact. Now, we'll revisit this fall when we do the long-range forecast, because with the housing boom or bust, the census adjustments that we've been projecting in the future may change, because we were having a significant decrease because of our growth relative to the entire area had slowed. That may reverse itself some bit, and we may be able to look at the revisit that for 11-12. I don't view that as a silver bullet in any way, shape, or form, but that may change in the future.
You had to find one nugget of good news.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to look for something.
As bad as it is for us, it's worse for others.
Again, highway user revenues. I do want to point something out on this graph. If you look at 08-09, it's a little slight increase over 07-08. One of the things that the econometric models tell us, and we get from a lot of the economists, is it's relatively, your decisions to travel are relatively inelastic. You go to do things because you have to do things. Pricing, of which we've seen a very big increase, does affect you in the short run, and you will start to modify your transportation behaviors. But until you modify what's in your budget and you return to your transportation model. So you see a little bit of a strength into 08-09 because people can't really sustain not going to get their groceries or going to work, or, you know, the alternative modes of transportation aren't really available in this economy. So there's a little bit of strength in 08-09 also on the HERF dollars. So just wanted to discuss a little bit again about how we manage the unrestricted general fund balance. We've adopted a policy that will target 8 to 10% goals on the fund balance. We are targeting 10% in our models because we don't want to get too aggressive in adjusting revenues and expenditures, or not to be aggressive enough that if something does further bump, that we're not into a real deficit real quickly. Excuse me. So just to tell you how that's calculated on the fiscal year's proposed expenditures. So when we have such a big hit to revenues like we've had, we've got to adjust ongoing expenditures to maintain that ratio into the future to maintain fund balance. As discussed in the December, we'll always continue to monitor that fund balance against revenues, expenditures, and we're currently looking at the 08-09, 9-10, and 10-11 fund balance pictures. Now let's get into, on slide 16, some of the issues that are starting to give us upward pressure that initially were not planned on. The items we're going to talk about here were not in the original proposed 08-09 budget. There's been a police market wage study that's been performed. There's some more information on this on slides 29 and 30. Give you some ranking and dollar amounts comparisons to the other cities. But what's significant under the current study is our police officer recruits through police lieutenants are either in the fifth or sixth rank against the six major valley cities under this current study. We're proposing under our current recommendation to give a 5% increase to those categories on July 1, 2008. Looking at a COLA for all employees, delaying it from where we were in the original proposed budget from a July 1st implementation, but a January 2009 implementation date, so that we can evaluate how revenues are coming in through the year. So there'd be a 3% bump then for those categories also. And then to make up for some of the other shortfalls, we'd have an increase for police recruits and officers of 5% in January, and a 2.5% increase for police sergeants in January.
You know, every time somebody else raises their salary, then we have to raise our salary, and then they go back and they raise their salary, and it becomes almost a vicious cycle. Is there some sort of antitrust legislation that prevents us from all getting together and saying, let's stop doing this to each other? I want to pay people well. I want to pay people a rational amount of money. I want them to be compensated appropriately. I am incredibly grateful to our police officers. So I'm not looking at this on the basis of, gosh, we're paying people too much money. I'm not doing that piece of the analysis right now. Part of the analysis that I'm doing is, what gives a rational decision-making process to this when the basis is how you're doing only in comparison to somebody else instead of on the basis of what somebody should be paid for a job?
Yeah, Vice Mayor and Council, I know I've had several discussions with other city managers in region about this very topic, and I think the concern is that, and even this came from Mayor Hawker, he says, there's something like 5 or 6 cities that all say they have to be in the top 3 in the valley, and that creates the issue. And so there's kind of this constant adjustment that's going on. Those who have kind of led the way as far as trying to be at the top of the salaries, I think they're starting to realize, and they're kind of feeling the pressure from the other cities that that's not helping. And I think it's just going to take time for those city councils from those other cities and others to maybe be able to understand what effect this has happened. And I think they are. I mean, times are getting tough for everybody. But there is a lot more conversation, I think, at the policy levels and certainly at the city manager perspectives about what can we do to try to manage this a little bit better. And but there isn't a solution today. And we want to remain competitive, and we want to retain our quality employees that we have. And at this point in time, we are not comfortable with where we stand in relationship to other cities in our competitive market, and we just feel like we have to make this change. Does that mean that there won't be other cities that are going to make changes? We already know, I think Phoenix is already scheduled for significant increases going forward. So I don't know what the answer is at the end of the day.
I've heard that both Chandler and Phoenix.
Chandler's already implemented there,
yeah,
I believe.
Chandler, what, 7% or something like that? I mean, you know, that was the number I heard. It seems to me that there ought to be an analysis that says this is an appropriate level of compensation for this job, as opposed to just always doing a comparative analysis. And I'm concerned about it. I know that we have to be competitive. I want us to be competitive. I want us to recruit the best people. But this is, you know, the implications of this go far beyond what we're seeing in terms of just the increase in their salary. Then there's all the implications in their retirement benefits as well. So this isn't the only hit that you take in the budget on it. Scott, you had your hand up. I really think it was up this time.
It was up this time.
Okay.
The private sector competes for their folks as too, and when you're looking at police officers, it is a shrinking pool of folks who are competing, if you will, for these positions. Or I think more appropriately, folks who hire police officers, which is every municipality, state government, the federal government, the private sector, are competing for a smaller and smaller pool of people willing to do law enforcement work. And to say that Three Valley Cities are raising the salaries of police officers is failing to look at the fact that officers also have the option, once they're trained, of going to the federal government to be FBI agents, border enforcement agents, ATF agents. They can go to the state government and be agents there. They can transfer to the private sector and do private security work. And the fact of the matter is, we're going to have to remain competitive. And if Tempe or was it Chandler wants to pay a 7% raise for their officers, nothing Mesa can do or say is going to stop them from wanting to compete at that level. And while it is frustrating and certainly a budget concern, and we have a right to be concerned, it's the market that you have to deal with police officers. And some of our other employees are the same way as well. So I just think that it's going to be a market-driven reality that to compete for officers and have them
join the department and stay in the department is going to cost money, and law enforcement is a foundation level bare knuckle service of municipal government. That's my comment.
Mr. Whelan.
I don't have a conflict on this, do I?
No, go right ahead.
One of the things that that bears to mind is the fact that Phoenix went to a 2%, I believe, a dedicated revenue source for public safety. I think that's what I'm saying, dedicated revenue. And I believe Glendale is looking at it.
They did it.
They actually put it in place. I think those are some things that if we're going to look at these continued rate increases, that I think the public would support that dedicated revenue source.
Right. And Mayor and Council, I think what the challenge is, unfortunately, is the funds that we're having to use to provide for these kind of increases, which are frankly disproportional to what the market is for most classes of jobs anywhere. I mean, we're not seeing these kind of increases anywhere else. But what it does is it limits our ability, which I think would make us even more effective, is to be able to hire more police officers in the future. And what it does is it raises the cost of adding more officers in the future because it just becomes so much more expensive. And that is a dilemma. But there is a lot of discussion. And in the monthly meetings I have with city managers, that is probably the question that there's always a discussion going around the table, who's doing what and where. But nobody wants to be seventh or eighth. You know, that's the dilemma. So.
And I'm not arguing against market forces. In fact, I always tell people that, you know, if you ignore the market forces, that you will lose because the market will prevail. On the other hand, we do have a metropolitan area that creates some of its own market forces in some areas. And Mike, I agree with you. I think that's something that Mesa's going to have to look at. Are there any other questions on this particular item? All right.
On slide 17, as we discussed in December, we had the fire pension and police pension, the public safety retirement system increase that was about $4.7 million. So with that market study and the 4.7, we're looking at an additional cost pressure to the general fund of $9.7 million. Now, that is very problematic since it wasn't figured into our forecast. It wasn't, and obviously with our current revenue structure, nothing's available to cover this issue. So we have proposed increasing the transfer from the enterprise fund for $7 million. Now what that does, looking at your footnotes below, we had an operating transfer scheduled in 07-08 of $83.5 million. We were scheduled to go down to 72.6. We're proposing to stay at 79.4, which is still a 3.9% or $3.9 million reduction from our current level of operating transfer.
So let's clarify that. We are actually, and I really struggle with the way what we're calling this an increase. I don't consider it an increase. We are going to be transferring less dollars from the enterprise fund to the general fund, even with this $7 million transfer. However, what had been forecast, as we had talked about in trying to at some point beginning to bring down the transfer, we had actually scheduled an $11 million decrease for this year. This is not the right year to be dropping that much of an increase to the general fund. And specifically, not only with the effect of the downturn in the economy, but with $9.7, almost $10 million in additional costs for public safety, personnel-related costs. So what we're proposing, instead of reducing the transfer by the $11 million, we'll keep $7 million of that, continue to come to the general fund. So we will reduce the total transfer that was scheduled by about $4 million from last year. So it will be less. Otherwise, not doing this, then we will have to go back and find $7 million of cuts in the general fund. I will tell you that the only way to do that, we will then have to go, and more severe than what you're already going to see, but we will have to talk about literally the elimination of complete programs. And I want to emphasize, these are not temporary reductions. It's not like, well, next year they'll come back. No, these are fairly permanent. They would take a decade probably before you could see, you already saw the effect of the decrease in the economy as far as revenues and how far it set us back. So this is the option that we've recommended. The utility transfer is able to do it. It's the health of the fund balances and the utility fund are significantly sufficient to handle this, and while at the same time allows us to achieve the a slight reduction, not as much as we had anticipated, but a reduction from the utility transfers, not at $11 million, but more at the $4 million range.
Scott?
I have two questions. First, the transfer from the general, transfer from the utilities into the general fund to cover this means that utilities won't have that money to use for something else.
No.
So what are they?
This funds are allocated into their contingency. This is not meaning that we're trying to reducing any capital expenditures in the utility fund. We're not proposing to, they still have their debt service payments or operations effect. We would still maintain the same amount of utility rate increases that we had anticipated as part of the forecast. So we're not raising rates in the utility fund in order to cover this. We are saying that the fund balances, the reserves in the utility fund, are more than sufficient to carry this additional transfer. Remember, just this current year, they transferred an amount more than what we're proposing for next year. We're actually reducing the transfer instead of by $4 million for next year.
So no changes in rate. Well, no changes in rates based on this move.
This will not affect any need for additional rate increases. There will be rate increases as we've scheduled out over the period of time. Yes.
And there's no change in the capital outlay, so they'll continue to invest.
They will
in the
continue
capital.
To be able to reinvest into the utility.
And does now contingencies deal with bond ratings, right? As far as general fund, is it
the fund
same
balances
thing?
Do? Yes.
Okay. So does this is that transfer going to affect
no.
the bond rating of? So no changes. Bond ratings would be fine for that.
The fund balances that we're currently projecting in the enterprise fund into the future are sufficient to cover this issue.
Okay. So financially that'll work out. Then the only real thing is that it's that system we set up in 1943. We're kind of having to rely on it again, and this time to bail it out. We're weaning ourselves off, and now what we. Again,
we're just not able to wean it off as fast as we had scheduled, so it's a slower pace than we had anticipated.
On a separate question, because this is on this page, on the retirement system. The retirement systems for police and fire, the public safety retirement system, the amount that the cities have to put in changes. 5-6 years ago, that was a very low percentage. And unfortunately, because of the economy, that amount goes up. Do we have any estimates from that board? One, what are they estimating that's going to look like over the next few years? Have they given us any numbers? And two, some of that increases deal with internally how they invest their money. They're restricted. Is there any state-level changes that might help out in the future of that coming along?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers, I can speak to that. Yeah, I know that PSPRS is working at the state level in order to change some of their investment options to give them some of the same abilities that ASRS has in order to improve maybe some of their returns on their investments. So they're working on that at the state level. In terms, Chuck may have the information in terms of adjustments, but what we see right now is that fund is not fully funded. All the cities are actuarially adjusted individually, but when you look at it in a whole, they're not to 100% funded, and so they'll be. We anticipate a few more years until they can recoup some of the losses of the decade ago or so that impacted the fund.
What Brian said is exactly true. This was about a 30% combined impact on this. There's been a lot of discussion that this was quite a shock to all the cities, especially given our economic cycle and so forth. So there's talks with them now on how they're going to implement any rate changes in the future and how they can mitigate this kind of impact. So I don't have any final solution or outcomes to that. Typically what we get in the fall is what their rate will be for the following fiscal year based on their actuarial study. So we have continuing and ongoing discussions with them related to that.
Okay. Look forward to hear what they end up coming up with and hopefully make some changes so that we don't feel it as badly, this increase in bad economic.
And I should add that what we've seen on the other side, the ASRS side, which most of our employees are at, we've seen significant increases in that over the past several years. This year we're actually going to see a moderation in that and no increase, if not a slight decrease in the contribution requirements by both the city as well as the employees. So what we hope is PSPRS will closely follow their behind and they'll level out also in terms of contribution.
And that's a win-win because it helps the employees, the retirees, and also helps the cities out. And so that needs to be done.
All right. Yeah, and just to mention, Bo, the city pays 100% of the increase
right, in PSPRS.
Whereas on the Arizona Retiree System, it's a shared proportion.
Dennis.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I just have a hypothetical question. If you assume, for purposes of discussion, that the City Council would take steps to enact a secondary property tax on existing bond debt, one, what would be the revenues raised by that action, and two, what would be the timeline for when those monies would be actually collected and to be able to be applied to the budget forecast that you have?
Well, if you go to slide number 21, we've got the 07-08 existing bond debt service.
And let's answer the first question. Yes. The answer to the question is for secondary property tax, if it were imposed today, it would only be available to pay for the existing debt service, general obligation.
Correct.
Debt
service. And I understand that.
And so what I just want to make sure this is clear for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that what we're going to show on page 21 is that future debt service payment as we're looking out into the future.
Now, the downside of that, that'd be a secondary tax only. And what's significant about on 21, this is debt that we're paying out of our current income streams. And I think that's the thrust of your question. The problem with it is, in the current form, it would be, even if it was implemented for this next year, it would take a year before we could ever collect anything. So this does not provide any relief for 08-09. So that's
but it does provide relief within your forecasted
in the
period.
Future. Yes.
And just to give a perspective, this year that we're in today, 07-08, and 08-09 combined, we'll be paying over $50 million in debt service that is coming out of the sales tax. I can assure you, when we get to the end of the day, we're not talking about a $50 million shortfall in our general fund. That shows you the impact. If we had a secondary property tax today, Mesa would not be talking about the cuts that we're talking about today. That's how significant this is. Now, the challenge is, it's a secondary, so it's related to debt service. It's not something we're going to necessarily look out way into the future. But if you look on that chart on page 21, and you look at the top number, today, general obligation, we have over $250 million in outstanding debt in the general fund, a very, very modest amount. But if you look what the payments are going to be, if you include this year, which we don't, or no, I'm sorry, right, the next fiscal year, which is the 08-09 number, which is over $25 million.
Correct.
And the next 5 years, we'll be paying over $25 million each year, and it's coming out of the sales tax, competing against the salaries for police officers and firemen. So let's see, 25 million times five.
125.
125 million. We're going to be paying almost a half of the outstanding debt service that the city has for the next 20 years in the next 5 years. So if anybody really wants to know what the pressure is on this budget, the economy is a kick in the pants, but this is even worse than what the economy, downturn in the economy, is doing to Mesa. I mean, think about it. We're trying to absorb, you know, $16 million, $18 million turned down in sales tax, while at the same time paying $25 million a year on debt service. That's how much more difficult it is for Mesa than any other city in the country.
Councilmember Whelan.
Having said that, Mr. Brady, if the new council takes office in June and changes our bond projection to pick up all the existing GO debt, which they would have the right to do, put that on the ballot rather than the new existing debt.
No, they can't put it on the ballot. It's already been voted on.
It's already been voted on. Now, the challenge we have is...
They could
is,
do it.
Without putting it on the ballot.
Yeah, without putting it on the ballot, is what we're saying. I'm sorry. Yes.
If that would be the case... I look out here to the audience, then this situation would be at least mitigated to some degree.
And as much as that is a conversation, and I'll let the future council talk about that, what this really also tells us is, and I'll just be real careful, though, this city, now I'll be quoting Mr. Rawls, how's that? That'll make it easier for me.
It's always a wise thing.
Yes, it is. As Mr. Rawls has pointed out, this is the very basics of municipal finance, the secondary property tax for pay for future capital. And if we cannot continue to issue debt without a secondary property tax in the future. I mean, if there isn't a better real-life example, here it is. Meaning that all our needs in the future, fire stations, police, communication systems, and streets, we have to have a secondary property tax, or otherwise we'll continue to perpetuate this challenge to future city councils.
And to take another point on that, you know, some of the critics say, well, if you had to build the Arts Center, you wouldn't be in this mess. But that's $100 million. That would only buy us 4 years.
Yeah.
Based on that analogy. One more question, Vice Mayor, if I can. The Congress and the President have put an economic stimulus package into place, and we'll all be getting our $600 to $1,200 checks starting in May. Any impact if everybody buys something in Mesa to our budget?
I always promote shopping.
In Mesa.
In Mesa. I mean, virtually, how much money is that per community, potentially?
I haven't done any projections on it.
We haven't calculated as any impact in the economy.
The whole purpose is to spend money, and that's the reason for that. And so I heard something when we were in Washington, Claudia, something like $1 billion for a geographic area.
Wow.
That could help.
We'll report to you in June and let you know.
It's a consumption. The U.S. is a consumption-driven economy, and so if you can, I mean, that's where our problems are coming from.
Realistically, it's real estate, though, is basically what our development and building, and that's what's really causing it's not mom and pop going to the Circle K and buying donuts.
We don't have sales tax on food, so that's
but it's everything.
Donuts.
It's everything. Donuts are food, even if you're
consumption home.
I don't know how many people noticed the other night, but at our either the study session on Monday night or the council meeting, underneath channel 11 was running right. It's up there right now. Support your city and shop Mesa. It keeps popping up there, and I thought we're reminding people all the time. Support your city, shop Mesa.
You'll see on the last slide. We'll emphasize.
And let's remind everyone: this council has already called an election for the bond election in November. So. You're discussing facts, and people then get to make their decisions about what they're going to do. But this council also suggested that approval of that would recommend that's what we do in terms of our general obligation bonds, is that we pay them with a secondary property tax. But we cannot go back and re-vote on things that we have already issued. So
that is correct.
Just want to clarify that.
Let's go to page 19. I think everybody's ready for the proposed solution to the problem here.
Yeah, are we done with 18?
So revenue and expenditure adjustments related to maintaining fund balance, we get to targeted reductions of $18.1 million. So then if we add the items that we did not have in the original proposed budget, we're at $20.8 million in cuts that are needed for 08-09. Yeah, you were very good. You were prophetic on what I was going to say this morning. So then we get to how we're going through the adjustments. That attachment that you have of the list is $16.5 million in suggested reductions.
Is that this list?
That is that list.
Yes.
Okay. That should probably be available on the web as we speak. That will detail, and for review into future meetings, as to reviewing these items, discussing these items, of what we're coming forward with. We also had an opportunity in our EBT contributions. We're suggesting a one-time adjustment. I don't want to say a decrease, because what we've done since 2003, Vice Mayor, you're very aware, we've been multiplying our health benefits by 10.6. That's been very, very close. But over those 4 years, we've seen now we've got an opportunity at one time with our cost containment programs and so forth, and the adjustments we've made in the system, to adjust that base one time by $4.3 million for this next year. Now, that's not to say next year we're not going to inflate our cost again. We're just adjusting that base this one time. So this is a one time, but it does give us out into the future, because you're adjusting the base, it gives us that ongoing coverage we need for into the future.
And this really also is a helps the employees, that we're not passing along that additional health cost premium that they would normally see. And because part of the recommendation in here is not employing the COLA until mid-year, this was one way to help balance out that them not receiving the COLA for the full year also.
So we're taking that opportunity not to pass any on increased cost to employees and this one-time adjustment to the city to adjust it into the future.
Vice Mayor, I'd just like to add on the list of adjustments you'll see, I think it's about eight or nine pages long. Not only have we itemized each of the adjustments by departments, but we've also included on those where there are reductions in positions, the number of positions that those would be impacted. For the most part, again, as we've talked this morning, this is really focused on general fund impacts. And overall, there are 134 positions that are listed on the list, 84 directly in the general fund, 44 additional are general fund, but they're building supported. They're the building safety group that are already out there. There are four others that Willie Black talked about last week in solid waste, as well as two quality of life positions that are out there related to municipal security. So those are itemized in your list and available so people can see.
Brian, your 44 on development services, mm-hmm. does that include the 35
yeah.
that we've already talked about? So
correct.
This is nine additional.
And there were 10, we talked about 35, and there were also 10 that were unfunded but listed in the budget book.
So it includes those?
Yes, yeah. It does.
And of these positions, how many are currently occupied?
Vice Mayor, I think we're still, do we have
that
count now?
I've got that number
okay.
for you. Currently filled is 46.8. Now, the thing about that is that changes daily, so that's the cautionary because we're constantly reviewing and placing people in vacancies as we can.
But that is a real, I mean,
we're talking about people's lives.
Absolutely,
here.
And that's why what we're proposing to do, Vice Mayor and Council, is that we've identified the dollar values that are needed in order to make these cuts and identified the position, or at least identified that they will be coming from positions, and I think we've given an overall number. But we plan on, after this meeting with council, we are going to go ahead and begin the process of identifying these specific positions and then go through the process we have internally to begin notifying individuals that their positions are possibly going to be eliminated so that we can be either, one, possibly find another position that is funded within the organization or help start working immediately with them on a transition from the organization. We've already been working with the 35 positions in building safety, and I don't care, just quickly, why don't you tell the council
sure.
where we
of
are
the
with four, that.
Vice Mayor, Council, of the 44 positions in building safety, 33 of those positions were filled and we needed to find placement for. To date, we are halfway through that process. 11 individuals have been placed in other positions throughout the city. Five individuals has chosen to seek employment outside of the city and are in the process of leaving the city at this time.
Okay, we'll start here and we'll move down. Councilmember Summers?
I'm just curious. I don't know if you make a simple answer for this, but when we talk about we took 11 employees, eliminated their position, and then they transferred into 11 other city positions, were those higher level positions or higher priority positions, or why do we just take 11 people, lay them off, and then rehire them in 11 other positions instead of just eliminating those 11 open positions? Does that make sense?
The process we go through is we make we looked at the positions in building safety because it is a enterprise fund. It's funded by the fees specifically related to building safety. We knew we had to eliminate in total 44 positions, 11 of which were not filled and did not have individuals actually sitting in those positions. We then have a policy that allows us to begin a process with human resources to begin to identify issues related to seniority and performance, and those individuals then get identified, and there's almost a ranking that's allocated. And then we work with each individual to work with them on identifying positions outside of now, obviously, building safety, where they would be qualified and where they could be placed. That effort took a higher level of coordination and complexity this time, because at the same time we knew we were eliminating other positions across the city. So we've tried to be very careful and considering the list that's in front of you and making sure that as we place individuals outside of building safety where we knew we had to make the cuts as a result of the downturn in the permit revenues and begin placing them in other positions throughout the city. So it was a matter of really matchmaking based upon the prioritization list that we have, those with the higher points, as we call it, in the city because of seniority and performance, get the opportunity to choose from positions that they're qualified for first. And that's and we kind of start at the top and work our way down through the list. And Carrie said we're halfway there. We work with more than half the employees.
But while you're coming up, the positions that we're now looking to eliminate are just enterprise positions. These are
general
fund
and
positions.
We've placed individuals in building safety out into
transportation, other utilities, positions. And so forth.
For example, council knows that we had a vacancy in the city manager's office, okay, the front desk. And so we've been able to place someone in building safety. We placed into that position, a position that is not being proposed to be cut here, but needed to be filled at some point in the future.
But the job needed to be filled.
The job needed to be filled, right.
Somebody
could
funded.
Test for the police department to bring one up from our recent past if they wanted to. You couldn't transfer you
no.
to test. But
it had to be there still was a qualification.
There's minimum qualification.
So there are jobs in the city that are not being cut because they are critical jobs that have to be filled.
Yeah, I'm sure there's
funded
there.
By other
several.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sorry. Councilmember Jones, we're just going to work our way around here, folks.
From the perspective of the fire department, I'm concerned that, we're cutting inspectors. We just went through process of building up our inspections of buildings, and now we're talking about cutting six positions for inspectors. And I just want to make sure that we're not getting ourselves a position. Are we still going to be able to do adequate inspections? I'm asking for help from the fire department.
And we'll bring the different departments in to speak to these specifically, but actually these positions need to be cut because we wanted to make sure we're matching up the revenues coming in with the resources that are allocated. So we're trying to make sure we're not creating a high-level subsidy from the general fund. So that's one of the reasons that if we had filled these positions going forward, it may put us in a position where the revenues would not be recovering 100% of the cost.
Well, and the whole point of the program was that we have inspectors go out and the fees that are paid for the inspections cover the inspectors, but we're not to that point.
We're getting closer, but we believe these positions, one, we think that they're being more efficient and being able to get out and do things, but these positions would not be able to be 100% recovered by the revenues based on what we're seeing today. So we've
based on the recent history.
Correct. And so we need to make an adjustment in the positions.
Chris, can we ensure that as questions like this come forward, that somebody, one of the staff members, is making note of them and making sure that we get
back
to that so that Kyle doesn't have to remember that he asked that question, but that he'll get the answer later on?
And keep it tracking.
Yeah, so somebody on your staff could take care of that. I'd appreciate that. Okay. Council Member-elect Richens.
Yeah,
when it's blue,
well,
it's
I
blue.
Know.
I spent my
I
first.
I guess there's going to be a training.
I spent my first
stuff,
2 years saying, "Is it on? Is it on?"
Come on, Dave. There's four of us.
No, he hasn't said.
All right. Is part of the reason that I guess you transfer them within the organization to retain some of the public safety, I mean the building safety expertise within the organization in case the economy picks up again. It gives us the flexibility to.
Absolutely.
That would
certainly one that would be a major reason. We're actually working with the city of Tempe, who has talked about possibly hiring some of our inspectors on a contract basis because they've got enough work, they believe, to carry them for another year or so. I mean, this is a conversation I had with their city manager, and they like the idea because they can keep it on kind of as a they see this surge in permitting activity, and then maybe at the time that they're done with that, if we see more activity, then we'll have the opportunity maybe to bring them back into the organization. We've also talked about identifying times if we get very large projects that instead of putting employees on an overtime basis to complete those projects and building safety, is that we work out an arrangement where we have maybe a standing contract with employees who are willing to do this that are having to be transition away from the city, that we could bring them on a contractual basis. We're trying to come up with different creative ways, either to keep them in the organization so we can bring them back, or even keep a contractual relationship with them so that if there is an opportunity in the future, we can bring them back.
That's always the thing I worry about, is we become a training organization and our good people leave.
Yeah,
and this is a good way to keep some of that expertise, and I commend you on that. The only other question I had is, what's the plan if things get worse? We have $16 million here. Do we have another $5 million in cuts we're thinking about if things get even worse, so we don't have to go through this painful exercise again? Do we have...
No, I can assure you, we do not know the depth nor the length of this downturn. Because a year ago, we were standing here telling you that sales tax was going to go up by more than 5%. And now we are 10% below that number. So that was kind of my, one of the things I was going to say at the end is that this has been a very painful process to this point. We are going to have to be very vigilant about the numbers. And I would anticipate that we will have these discussions probably more frequently. If we see things continue to worsen, then we may have to have continued discussions about further cuts. And at that point, I think that's why it's going to be important to get with the new council early on and talk about priorities of programs, because at this point, our next cuts will be programs and not just elimination of vacant positions or reduction in some services.
Okay. It's just city employees have lives and bills and stuff that they need to plan on, and I wanted them to know that that's the huge consideration.
Right.
And that we care about
and
that.
Sooner,
that's an important
right.
thing.
Right. That's why we need to get
the sooner
out.
Sooner we can
that.
Get that
yep.
that kind of stuff out there is the better. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Whelan.
I don't need the answer today, but I'm concerned in a couple areas, and that's the overtime, $800,000 in the police department. I know that's a problem right now, from what I understand, and I worry about quality of service and being able to handle what they need to handle. I know that one issue can float that thing really high, so when the PD does their budget presentation, I'd like to hear more about that. And then I was really enthused with the fire department's response program with the, I guess we call it the TRV pilot program. I hate to see that go away. I'd like to know, is it really a cost savings to do what we're doing versus having to roll the way we used to do it? Some sort of analysis.
There is, and recall, this was a pilot program for 2 years, and so essentially we're cutting it short by 1 year. And it wasn't producing savings, but what made it successful is it was helping us on our response times and availability. But it's kind of like building new fire stations. You know,
if they could just go through that.
We will certainly do that. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rawls.
And that actually, Chris, was going to be my question. I just wanted to make sure that we understood this. We're not really supposed to make detailed questions or comments on this proposed list today. Each of the affected departments is going to be in here over the course of the next 2 months
right.
to explain in detail, answer questions. We'll have time to
absolutely
at least discuss whether we like that or not, or identify other things. So I appreciate the work that everybody has done to identify a potential series of cuts. We all have, I guess some of us don't have responsibility to actually implement them, but I think we still have the responsibility to evaluate them and comment on them. So I appreciate the fact.
Thank
I just wanted
you,
to make sure I understood the scenario, because I didn't want to spend this morning going through this. And
right. The purpose today was, and I kind of sensed from council when we start talking about the shortfall, how we're going to address it, instead of kind of piecemeal bringing different departments, I wanted to give you at least one effort to show the totality of it, and then we can bring the departments in.
And I agree. I just want to give people an opportunity as things jump off the page for them right now, not to have a detailed discussion, but if there are specific areas. Councilmember Kavanaugh, did you have any? Okay. Let me just say that my question was the same as Mr. Whalen's. I wanted to make sure that I'm concerned about that TRV pilot elimination. So I'm going to have to hear another, a little more presentation on that. And I do appreciate this. These are people's lives. One of the challenges that we face anytime we have an economic downturn is that even discussions like this discourage people from spending money. And whether we like it or not, we are an economy that is driven by
consumption.
Consumption. Yeah, particularly in Mesa. We're but not just in Mesa. That's true throughout the United States. We are very consumption-driven economy, and so even the negative conversations start to make people feel like they aren't going to go out to dinner to eat. They aren't going to spend their money. When that money comes from the federal government, they're going to be using it to build up their bank accounts. Not that I'm suggesting that those are negative things, but they do have consequences in terms of the numbers we're looking at.
Vice Mayor, and I guess I'd just like to add that, you know, none of these items that are listed on this list were easy to make or easy to choose. I think you've all said that. While Chris has said that many of them we'll have to come back if we do need to come back and make deeper program cuts, but there are in fact some program cuts on here that we've gotten to such a point that if we would make one adjustment of one more body, you know, it really doesn't make the program viable. We'll hear about those as we come through the department, but it does bear noting that there are programs and that each of these does have a clientele out there that's being served and that's going to be impacted, and we do know that and recognize that. But none of them have been easy, but the next group, if we ever have to go that far, will be significantly more difficult, and it gets more difficult. I guess I should back up and say we went through this in 2006, 2007, and we made a lot of very difficult choices at that time. Here we see ourselves making reductions that are even larger in terms of both dollars as well as the number of positions that are impacted that we did in 2006, 2007.
I appreciate you making that point. I also want to reiterate, these are people's lives. We take that very seriously. We have not targeted people because of their job performance. That is not what's going on here. I know that it's so easy to personalize these things and think that somehow somebody was out to get you or you made somebody mad. That isn't what's going on here. And I just want to make that very clear to everyone that we were not trying to find places to eliminate people's positions. I note that there's some other items on here that I have concerns about that I don't think we've gotten to on page 20, the increase in vehicle fuel costs and some other things. So can we go back to this?
If you would like to. We've got some other considerations.
We will give everyone an opportunity. You know, we've all just seen this morning. Right. We didn't get an advance copy of this, and so this gives everybody a chance to look at this, and in the weeks ahead, we will be having additional discussion on this. I'm not trying to shortcut it, but
Some of the other issues that we've identified for other consideration is obviously the volatile price increases with fuel. We're estimating the upward pressure of possibly as much as $1 million for next year that's not currently in that budget. But this one changes so quickly, even writing in this morning, listening to the economist on the business radio, fuel or the oil consumption dropped 1% last month. So prices may decrease. So we'll be monitoring this and forecasting this through this cycle, and we'll come back with you with what we would suggest if we continue to see this upward pressure. The other big issue going on at the legislative level right now is the possible changing of state revenue sharing formulas. We've got everything budgeted now as if the formula stays the same. So this is very key to us that this does stay the same.
Can we step back for one moment, please?
Yes.
In terms of the increasing prices for vehicle fuel, Chris, what have we done on a citywide basis to address trip reduction, to address possible carpooling, and things like that?
As far as the employees are concerned.
Correct. I'm talking about use of fuel by the city, not their own personal carpooling. I'm talking about use of carpooling. If two people are going to a meeting or three people going to a meeting, that they're all getting in the same vehicle. We're saying if we can have a telephone meeting, we have a telephone meeting instead of driving to the meeting. What kinds of things are we doing?
Well, those are areas that we need to continue to be more vigilant on, probably. I'm not aware that most of our fuel consumption is going to be based upon our equipment that's out in the field.
Police, fire, utilities.
Solid waste. Those are probably the major, bigger ones. So those aren't necessarily employees going to meetings. They're going to a project. They're responding to a fire or emergency or whatever it might be. So while there may be a little bit of discretionary fuel consumption in our totality, it's going to be a very small fraction. It's really I think where we make the best difference is trying to keep our vehicles maintained so they're running efficiently and they're using that fuel efficiently. And I think we've made some big steps in that regard, just to maintain the fleet at a higher level so that those vehicles are burning the fuel more efficiently.
I just want to raise everyone's awareness on that, though, because even if it's a small percentage, it makes a difference.
Sure.
And the other thing is, going forward, you know, some analysis of the impact of our having in our case, I think it was the Toyota.
The hybrid.
The hybrid. You know, what has happened and what we should do in looking at our fleet. Should we expand that?
Okay. You can have Pete make a presentation on that.
Okay. Thank you.
And then kind of the thing that we have driven home all day today, the continued fluctuation in the economy. We may be revisiting this issue this fall as we go forth with the next biennial. So just staying with that theme, I just want to make sure that everybody understands, because we've made these very painful cuts, we may not be done.
Councilmember Summers?
Chuck, I probably know the answer to this already, and if I don't, I probably don't want to ask it anyway. Have we even hit bottom in the economy yet?
We have not hit bottom, sir.
We don't, we don't even know what
we
the
don't know
is.
That we do not think we have hit bottom.
We don't know the bottom.
And have no idea how deep this hole goes?
Typically, once you start these economic cycles, then we get back to it's usually an 18-month window on a recession cycle. So if we go
you
back.
Use the word.
Excuse me?
You use the word recession.
It feels like one here.
It feels bad when we're going through it, but it's typically an 11 to 18 month window.
Where are we now?
No one has called a recession yet. That's the problem.
So we haven't started the clock.
We have not started that clock officially.
But we started feeling it in
October.
Fall. That's right, fall. Mm-hmm.
I called the recession in August. And yeah. I understand that an economist 2 days ago said that he believes the recession started in August, so... Hey, I'm getting my degree in the dismal science when I go for my graduate degree. But I think that there's one more shoe that we're waiting to have drop in the economy. And haven't seen that one drop. But most of the shoes have dropped.
July.
Earliest, I would say July or August. And maybe a year from then. I'm not calling July or August on the ending of it. Okay, do you... And have then, we looked at these pages, or
yeah?
Do
let's go to page 22, slide 22, and this gives you the budget timelines, just to give you kind of a thumbnail of where we're going to go and how we're going to for these discussions. March through May, we'll have these study sessions discussing the items that you're bringing up. March 27th, which is next week, we'll have the Audit and Finance Committee meeting on the fees, charges, and utility rates for discussion there. Last week in April, we'll have the preliminary budget and the CIP documents provided to you as we're going forward. And May 3rd, we'll have a study session on the review of the 07-08 year-end estimates. We'll do our rebudgeting, giving you those items there, and our 08-09 final projections going into final preparation for final adoption. The 19th, we'll have a committee council meeting to adopt the utility rate notice of intention. June 2nd, adopt the tentative budget and introduce the utility rate ordinances. The 23rd, public hearings on all those subjects and adopt the 08-09 budget, five-year CIP, and utility rates. July 1st, the new fiscal year begins. And July 30th, the revised utility rates become effective for billing cycles ending on or after August 29th.
So, Vice Mayor, can I speak to the council-elect for just a half a second?
Please do.
June 2nd, they will be adopting the tentative budget. That is that really effectively you adopting, not to an exceed number, I think is what it is,
yes,
but you're essentially adopting the budget on that first June. And really that allows a period of time for notices and publication, but at that point, the opportunity for changing the budget really has, you can go down, you just can't go anymore. You can't go any higher than the number that we set on June 2nd. And then the second meeting that we have June 23rd, that is the adoption of the budget. So obviously as much input as we can get from our veteran council members as well as the council elect during these next few months will be helpful, because that first meeting that they're actually sworn in will be adopting the tentative budget, which is actually that's a pretty significant point in time in the budget consideration. Thank you.
Okay, any additional questions on this? Councilmember elect Richens.
Just the date about the bond election.
Oh, right
here.
The election's been called. The opportunity to modify that, I think, expires July 21st of July. So really, that has to happen within the first three meetings.
21st.
schedule any time off.
22nd. Thank you.
Additional questions on this item? Okay. And you note, yeah, I was going to say, it says Shop Mesa.
Shop Mesa.
We aren't even subliminal anymore.
No, we just.
I'll just leave that up for
and I Chris, if you had not talked to our council-elect, I was going to say welcome. Welcome to our world.
And we do just have, just for the new members, elect members to the council, just to give you an idea, we did attach some items back here for your review. Average homeowner survey, which you will see a lot being produced by us, on slide 26. 27 is just the percentage change of the summary of that graph. We do, on page 28, an operating budget comparison for major valley cities and what that means to us. And 29 and 30 is the information on the police market survey. So.
Councilmember Jones.
Clarify on that operating budget comparison. That is our operating budget. That's not the overall budget, because not all cities have the utilities, the gas company, the electric, and all that. This is operating budget comparison.
That is correct.
It's less. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You know
what? It gets less the debt components and the bond components related to it. It's recognizing everything that you spend on an operating basis. So it does include our utilities, because it's very hard to do an apples to apples. So it's not really apples to apples. Even knowing that we're heavy in utilities, we're still at the lowest end of the scale, knowing that we have other utilities, other areas that don't have. But as of being fair, let's give it like Phoenix. They have a huge airport operation. Airport. So it's very hard to get you a pure apples to apples. So we've just taken it from a level of the operating budget stripped of debt and bonds.
So, but everybody's understand that when we're talking about budget, we're talking about, we're including all the gas purchases that we resell, the electricity that we resell. That's all included in our budget.
Yes, sir.
And we're still at the bottom end.
Yes, sir.
And we're a larger city than almost all of it.
And this has changed since the last time.
Yes, sir.
We saw this, because it was Phoenix was about $1,000 per resident per year higher than we were.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And now it's Chandler that's at $1,400 per resident per year higher. Okay.
I think that's it.
Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll move on to item number 3. Let me make sure I still have a quorum. I do. All right. We have a motion for approval of the receipt of minutes of various boards and committees.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Rawls, seconded by Councilmember Jones. I don't know if you heard his motion there at the beginning, so we'll get that on the record. All those who are entitled to vote on this, would you please vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Hear report on meetings and or conferences attended. I went to a ribbon cutting yesterday at Comerica Bank, which just opened at Riverview. Trying to remember, I think I've got some others since our last report, but that's the only one I'm going to add on here. Anybody got anything else? All right. We will move on to meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
There is a General and Economic Development Committee meeting that will follow this meeting, and our next study session will be March 27th. And that will be followed by an audit and finance committee meeting.
And pack a lunch for that one.
Yeah, pack a lunch for that one.
Maybe even bring your sleeping bag, Mr. Wells. For the audit and finance committee meeting, not the... All right. Actually, you're just going to make one motion at that one, right? I think that's where we're headed. All right. Item number 6, which is items from citizens present. Do we have any requests to speak?
No requests.
All right,
ma'am.
Then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thank you.